Welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast with me, Sam Harris, your host. I invite fascinating humans from all walks of life to share their wisdom and unpack their mindsets and formulas for growth.
Hello, Growth Mindset listeners. Today's guest does a fantastic job of introducing himself, so I'll let him kick things off.
First of all, hello everybody. I cannot see you, I cannot hear you, but I assume that you're out there. I'm very happy to be here, and the company what we are building is we're building technology to make human learning faster using artificial intelligence. And we started to use this technology first for teaching languages super fast. We believe that this technology that we are building is applicable to other fields of education as well, as we measure so many things about the learning and we train our algorithms to understand what's happening inside your brain. And we're building algorithms which leverage this information to make you to learn faster and more effectively.
Okay, can you tell me how you first had the idea?
My previous career was not related to languages at all. I was a nuclear physicist at the Center of European Nuclear Research. It's a huge scientific laboratory on the border of Switzerland and France. Maybe some people have heard about it, CERN. And some years ago, there was one of the biggest discoveries in this century, or at least decade, when we discovered the Higgs boson. And I was lucky to be the member of the discovery team at the time. When having this discovery, I started to think whether we could use the same kind of technology for teaching people faster, because essentially we were teaching computers how to find unknown particles. And I thought that we're using some really cool algorithms, and I was just curious if I would apply those algorithms on my own learning, how quickly I would learn. And then I built myself a software to learn French really quick, and using this CERN software and algorithms. And I did it as a hobby, but then the hobby went out of the control, and at some point I realized that actually I'm building a company now. And then I had to quit my job as a scientist and start being chief executive officer of Linguist.
That's a big change.
Yeah.
So that must have been a real, complete wide right turn. Were you slightly unhappy doing science at that point, or was it just new and you felt that you could dedicate to doing it?
Yeah, if I look back, then probably I was a little bit unhappy sometimes, because I thought that I'm not so great scientist. I knew that if I had learned more and if I had been more hardworking, then I would have been much better scientist. And there are moments in your life where you have been expecting, you have been trying to achieve a big goal. And after achieving this big goal, like discovery of the Higgs boson, you feel like empty, that what's next? What's now? Because and it was probably some slightly unconscious decision, because I was not intending to leave science. It was just a side hobby project. But when I had to make this decision whether to proceed with this path, then I was thinking about one of my hobbies, hiking on the mountains, and in a very, very wild way, because I had some hobby to hike in completely uncivilized places in Siberia and in high mountains. And if you go out from your warm home to the windy field where it rains and snows and it's cold and you are wet and you have a heavy backpack and you have to walk miles and miles, then on the first glance, it seems quite unpleasant. Why people should do it? But there is, if you are on this journey, then it has some kind of attraction to test your limits and to be in a different environment. And you're also happy when you come back home. And this decision to start the company was kind of similar to me, that I'm going to the hiking trip. Yeah. I do not know which lands I will discover and what will happen, but there was some romantic attraction to do it.
Yeah. It is one of those things, as in, you never know what's going to happen. And you don't really ever plan a hiking trip for terrible weather. You're kind of it's going to be beautiful in the sun and things. Then when it happens, it's it's awful and there's a storm. You spend the entire time being this is terrible. I've got blisters or I'm just wet and I'm cold. But you get to the end and you're that was so awesome. And
yes,
it's so similar with the businesses.
Yeah, exactly. The same feeling is now that it's a super awesome journey that I took, of course, I took a lot of risk leaving a really well-paid and prestigious job, but I have not regretted it since.
Oh.
I was thinking that I will see when I start to regret it, maybe in half a year's time or 1 year's time. But I guess that I have not regretted it now, then I will never regret it anymore.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So what is your general role now? Because obviously you used to just be doing research and you know.
This is a tough question that all of the CEOs have to ask from themselves. I started to realize that I'm a CEO of the company when I was 1 year in, that, okay, I am the CEO. And then I started to think that, okay, what the CEO has to do, because I had never had any experience working in a proper company, because I had been a scientist for whole of my life. I read some books and I have defined this role for myself as it has three key things that CEO has to do. Thing number one is my responsibility is to keep company funded so that we have enough money to weather the storms. Finally, the company is bringing in revenue so that the shareholders are happy. We're doing it in such a way that we make our customers happy as well. But the number one thing is to keep company funded. The second thing is to make sure that right butts are on the right seats. And the third thing is keeping the vision. This is the most complicated thing, because you can ask, what does it mean, keeping the vision? You probably do not understand it before you have lost the vision or you have done a bad job doing it.
Cool. So I really like to ask questions that compound on what's just been explained. And I do often go into funding of companies or how to hire or how to maintain a vision, depending on what the person needs to have the skill sets on. But obviously, you've just spoken about all three. So I want to ask you, how do you do all three? So firstly, funding. How did you secure funding?
In general, it's, I guess, pretty much the same for all of the startup companies who use venture capital money, that they... The first step is to convince somebody to give you a little bit, like 50,000. And normally those people are fools or friends or family. If you have got something going with this little bit of money, then the next round is angel investors.
Can we not go to the next round too quick? Like, how did you do that, though? Did you go to like your friends and family? Did you write like a business plan?
The way we did it initially was that I had a co-founder. He came from banking. When we were thinking, where can we get money? Then he said, oh, well, there are banks. We can take a loan. Which is not very typical. But no. We took mortgage on our houses and took some small loan from the bank. And when we had taken some loan, then it was easy to demonstrate to the angel investors that we believe what we're doing. We have taken personal risks. And this was a huge argument to raise the seed round. Because at that moment, you do not have anything except of your idea. And the biggest argument for angel investors is your commitment. And by taking this loan, we demonstrated that we can take some loan risk. We, of course, will put some our money into the game as well.
Yeah, that's really cool. It's not actually the typical thing you hear, to be honest. And there's actually, I would be much more impressed if I was investing in you and you said, like, oh, I took a loan to start this rather than like a, I raised the money of people that didn't understand what I was doing just because I could. It's good. Okay. And then, so that then you got through like your first major round, and then from then it's just been more proving traction? Or?
Yes. Then we raised Series A round from a Japanese e-commerce giant, one of the biggest companies in Japan, Rakuten.
Yeah.
If you're a football fan, then you have maybe seen Messi playing with the Rakuten logo.
Cool. Well, congratulations. Yeah, how did that come to be? You just speaking to loads of different investors and somehow went to Japan?
It's quite random, to be honest. Because we were not raising funds at that time because we thought that we have enough money from the angel investors. And it's said that startups, they should always raise money, even if they do not need money. In fact, it's easier to raise if you do not need. And there was just one random moment in a random conference in UK or Cambridge, where I took a taxi with one nice lady and had a chat with her in a taxi while driving to the conference dinner. And she said that she's organizing Mikitani's trip to Slush in Helsinki. And I asked, who is Mikitani? She said that, oh, don't you know? He's the CEO of the biggest Japanese company. It's like an Amazon in Japan. I said, oh, no, I don't know. but can you organize me a meeting with him? And she said, yeah, maybe I can. And then it turned out that she organized a meeting. Unfortunately, I couldn't go to this meeting. But I sent my chief technology officer, who had never pitched in his life before.
Wow. no pressure.
Yeah. And he screwed it up, kind of. He gave a very good pitch, but he couldn't talk to him afterwards because there were so many video cameras around and he didn't like it quite. And he just gave me the business card. And I just sent a cold email a couple of months later that, by the way, I'm coming to Tokyo. We didn't have a chance to meet in Helsinki. Can we have a meeting? And yeah, they answered, yeah, why not? Yeah. And then I made my plan to go to Japan, because actually when I sent an email, I had no plan to go there. But yeah, it somehow went very well. I met many, many, many other companies in Japan. And then basically in this meeting, he said that I want to invest. And
cool,
we took it from there.
That's amazing. It's funny to look back at things and they seem kind of inevitable. But at the time, yeah, it must have been like
some tiny,
the
random
possible chance, but yeah, I'll just give it a go anyway.
Yeah.
Like, you're probably doing like a million things just like it. Yeah. Like one of them just happens.
Exactly,
to be
exactly. So this is the lesson, that some tiny things may actually turn out to be quite big things.
Yeah, yeah.
And you never know.
Definitely. Cool. That's also like one of the reasons why you should just be nice to everyone, because you never know who you're being nice to. Mm. And
exactly,
sometimes things come back.
Yes, exactly.
I'm sure you could have like taken a cab by yourself and not offered to share or something. Who knows, you'd be sat here like broken, yeah, no money. Or you may have found something else. But so yeah, number two, how do you go around hiring and firing people?
We have been extremely lucky hiring really, really great people. I do not really know how it has happened. Sometimes it's like a miracle.
Yeah.
The story is that in the early days, we were looking for chief technology officer. It's the most crucial role in technology business, especially if you're building a complicated product which has to scale to millions of people and is has complicated machine learning architecture, then you need a really, really good chief technology officer, because the early days are very important. If you do not build a good foundation, then you cannot build a skyscraper on it. Our chairman, or at that moment, he was just an investor, but he was the technical co-founder of Skype, and I asked him whether he knows somebody who he could recommend. And he said that, yes, I could recommend you one really good guy who was my boss at Skype. He was the leader of Skype core technology team, and technical co-founders convinced him to join Skype for a year because he had already his own business. And they have later said that when he joined Skype, then actually Skype took off because he was so good. Wow. And now when Skype was successful, it was sold to eBay and Microsoft, and he was still working at Skype. And all of these Skype technical co-founders, they had made a lot of money. They became investors, building other great companies. Jaan Tallinn, our investor, he was one of the first investors in DeepMind, which is the leading artificial intelligence company now acquired by Google. And he had many, many tens, even more companies, I know, 60, 70 companies in his portfolio. And he said that he has been trying to pull this Skype technical lead of core technology team out from Skype for years to recruit him to his companies, and they were good friends, and he had like the best chances to do it. By far the best chance to do it. And he said that, okay, I have been trying to pull him out from Microsoft for years to my own companies. I have never succeeded. I can make an introduction. The probability is essentially zero for you, but I can still make the introduction. And then we met in a canteen, had a lunch, and I asked him whether he wants to be an investor. He said, yeah, well, it's a cool idea. I like what you're doing. It's important to make people to learn better, because he was also very committed in learning. And then at some point, we proposed him to advise us as an investor. And he said, yeah, I would like to advise you. I would like to be an advisor. And then after some time, he said that, you know, actually, I would come full time to your company. And this was like a big investment, yeah, yeah, from any great VC.
Yeah.
And we have been extremely happy since then. And it's super impactful to the company to have such great people, because they attract other great people and so on. Lucky occasions.
That's a really good point, that if you've got someone that's really interesting to work with, it definitely drives the thing. Did you have to give up a lot of equity to...
It's a very common thing that if you start a company, you cannot pay much in the beginning because you do not have money and you do not have a product. And then the only thing that you have is give a stake of your company. And it's a very normal thing to do.
Can you say how much it was?
I can tell you the approximate numbers. What are the market standards that... Yeah. If you start a company, then in every funding round, you allocate approximately 10% to the option pool. And then you divide this option pool between these early people. And in the next funding, you will do the same. And then the next funding, you will do the same. So, but as company grows, then in the third funding, the option percentage compared to the total amount of the stock options is, of course, smaller. Sure. But you can calculate what it could be approximately.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. Thank you. It's just handy because I'm actually being asked that quite a lot lately.
Mm.
And then I guess the other important thing about hiring is having a good vision, and that would make interesting people want to come and work for you. So
yes.
How do you maintain a good vision?
Yes. Vision is kind of evolving thing anyway. I think I could do a much better job on creating this vision and especially communicating this vision. And it definitely plays an important role on the hiring process. When I started this company and I was looking for great natural language processing people to join us, then I joined the most important conferences and did some research. Who are the best or most important professors participating in this conference? And I was not very sure whether this thing, what I'm doing, resonates with them. But I made a slide deck where I explained what is our goal. We're building technology which helps people to take best of their abilities because we measure, while they're learning, we can measure the memory processes and we can use artificial intelligence to optimize the learning process so that they would learn the fastest. And we use different natural language processing tools, and this is what we have now, and this is what we want to build in the future. That it really something that is missing on the market can be done. It's people would extremely benefit from having that kind of product. And I had my slide deck, and I selected 40 professors from in the conference, and I hunted them down. I had half an hour chats with all of them. And I was very surprised that actually all of those professors became enthusiasts right away. There was not a single meeting that I had where they said that, no, it's boring, I know, it's something, forget it. Everybody were very inspired about it. And then I started to ask whether you know some good students who could join this company. And through these channels, we found extremely good people.
Yeah.
Because professors know the students, they know who are the most talented guys, they know what they have done, they recommend the best people. And so when you have these great people in the team, then they start to build this vision already by themselves.
Mm.
That is a part of the early vision or the initial ideas, but they keep evolving and these new people start to contribute more and more, and then it's not my company but the team's company and the team's shared vision. And they come up with awesome ideas which get into the product.
What's the biggest risk that you've taken?
I guess building the company is the biggest risk, to lose my scientific career, because I was not expecting that it will take over. And now I have drifted quite far away from the science already.
Mm.
If you have 5-year break from science, then it's not likely that you can go back.
What are you worried about?
Nothing. I'm not worried about anything. I just had a vacation, longest vacation that I have had in my journey of building the company, and currently I'm not worried about anything. I have some challenges and some things that I have to solve, but I'm confident that I can solve them, so I'm not worried.
Okay. What about less in the immediate future? Like, are you worried about AI or global warming or anything like that?
Yeah, this is a bit broader question. There are reasons to worry about many things. In the practical life, better to worry about those things that you can actually change and make difference where you can make a difference. But in the bigger picture, yes, this development which are happening with artificial intelligence and aligning the motivation of artificial intelligence with our motivation is quite important. Being environmentally friendly is equally important to me as well. Although for a CEO who has to raise money from different continents, it's quite tough to be environmentally friendly because you have to fly so much, and flying is the least environmentally friendly thing that you can do.
But yeah, like you say, it's not that helpful to worry about things that aren't changing or that you're not going to have an impact on. And
yes,
you can kind of live your life and be happier.
You have to worry about those things that you can actually change and make an impact. And in certain ways, definitely all of us can make a difference in the environmental questions.
But yeah, there's something around like the mindset of it as well, as in it can kind of ruin your day if you let it worry you too much or stuff. Like, I used to get really pissed off whenever anyone would boil a kettle and it was full, because I'm like, oh my god, the laws of physics. I mean, you take time filling up the kettle like five times just filling up to waste the time when you only need one cup of tea, and then it's going to take six times as longer because it's also like getting colder the whole time it's warming up. And it's just like, oh Jesus. And I just boil up with rage. Like, I have to stop myself from shouting at someone. And then you're like, well, actually, there's like 7 billion people on the planet. Like, maybe 10% of them are all doing this. I'm not getting angry at every single one of them doing it. Like, I'm only getting angry at the one person in my kitchen doing it. So why am I letting it ruin my day? As in, I can be nice to this person and I can maybe educate them how to like not ruin the planet a little bit more and save some of their time. And I can actually just be happy and not be like, oh God, the whole time.
Yeah, this is something that the CEO work has taught to me, that you have to choose your battles and you have to keep focus on things that you can change and worry about those things that you can change. Because if you try to worry about everything and try to do everything, then you will not do anything and you will not make an impact in the positive side.
Yeah, it's a really big lesson. It's kind of a hard one to grasp until you sort of suddenly realize you're doing it and you're like, messing so much stuff up. Cool. What's your most vivid memory from childhood?
I have one very vivid memory from childhood when I was 3 years old. I was in a kindergarten and it was a cold winter day. I decided that at the lunchtime, I go home. And I walked through the city. It was tough because if you are 3 years old, you are quite short and you cannot see much. So it was tough to find the right houses and the right streets. So I made it home and I was really lucky climbing up the staircase, and I felt I have achieved something. I was really happy, and I didn't really realize why my grandmother was not so happy.
She was going ballistic.
Exactly. Yeah, she went ballistic, and my mother was at home. She went ballistic, and then I was taken back to the kindergarten. But just before, I had very high emotions because I thought that, hey, now I can come home by myself, and you do not have to worry anymore about it. I can whenever I want to.
That's amazing. I know exactly that feeling when you're like, Mom, I've done this amazing thing. And they're like, oh my God, don't do that. And you're like, what? Everything I know about it tells me I've done a good thing. And now I'm being told this is the most terrible thing.
Exactly. This was a very confusing feeling.
Yeah. Oh, I can so relate. That's so funny. Cool. So what did you actually kind of understand why you're being told it eventually, or did it take a while to...
Oh yeah, they spent time explaining to me why I should not come home on my own.
Okay. That's amazing.
Thank you for joining us this week on the Growth Mindset Podcast. Before you head on to another episode, what's your biggest aha moment from today's discussion? You can share with us your insights and join us on Reason FM. Reason FM is a social podcasting app and the best way to discover new podcasts, connect with hosts and other listeners. Also, don't forget to tune into the Wiser Than Yesterday podcast with me and my co-host Nico, and we expose you to a different perspective and dive into the world's most thought-provoking and inspiring books. That's all for this episode, and with that, keep learning and keep growing.